Hey, Kelly and Jeff fans. Here's a new show to check out called Hollywood Ways from Entourage creator Doug Ellen and multi-talented rapper and star of the TV hit show All-American, Breezy. Episode 2 is out now. Now, here's a preview of Episode 1 of Hollywood Ways.
Hollywood Ways is here. I am Doug Ellen. This is going to be an unfiltered podcast. I have been in this town 30 years. I've seen ups and downs and everything in between. I've got Breezy, who's hot as hell right now.
Steaming.
CW All-American, Empire before that. What's going on?
I'm super excited. I feel like I just, you know, I want to be here. I want to talk to you.
Well, I thought today we would talk about our beginnings in Hollywood. And we're here just so everyone knows, because there was some stress. Action Park Media, which is Kevin Connolly's conglomerate that runs podcasts all over the world. We do the Victory of the Podcast that you probably haven't heard, but you should.
Sure.
But we do that over there. He may or may not chime in. He's sitting in the booth.
I'm just so comfortable in this booth.
So what's up with you? You got season 3 of All-American coming back. Season 4. And I want to start from the very beginning with you, because your story's interesting. Mine, very different, but we both kind of came from complete outsiders in this town and this business. So what happens to you? Just give me a little update. You're from Philly, and where does this all start?
From Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Grew up in Wilmington, Delaware. I don't know. I had the ultimate dream of just getting out. Getting out of the city, I mean, coming from a major city like that, a lot of poverty, a lot of just trash. You know what I'm saying? Not too many people have the desire to go anywhere. I kind of kept just tunnel vision, so to speak.
And what was your goal?
I just wanted to be great. I didn't really know. I kind of felt like I would be in the entertainment world somewhere. My hobbies were making music, got into that, thought it was fun. It was a way to, like, you know, speak the shit that I couldn't say to people.
Right.
You know what I mean? So that was my thing. It was that. I was cutting hair, going to school, doing normal shit. Ended up moving to Atlanta with my mom, began cutting hair, met a lot of people. Got tired of that, moved to L.A. And I got
Why'd you move to L.A.? And how'd you move to L.A.? I mean, did you have some financial backing?
I had nothing. I had nothing but the person I was dating, and we both were just like, we need to change the pace. She was a songwriter, or is a songwriter still, and was signing a deal.
Was it you leading the way, or did she go, I'm moving to L.A., and you were like, I'm coming?
No. It was a collective. Because she could have stayed in Atlanta and still signed and did what she had to do, but it was a collective. Like, you know, we might as well just go, like, try something new. So we came.
And then what happens? Because I know my first day in Hollywood, I knew one person, which was I ended up marrying her, my ex-wife. I knew nobody. I met her on the phone, and I came out here, and I ended up moving into her parents' house. So where did you go? I had nothing. My parents gave me a little bit of money. I had a little white privilege. They gave me
We had no help. I think she might have had her advance, whatever that was, which I'm not sure. But we came. We got a shitty apartment in North Hollywood. We hated it. It had roaches in it.
Right.
And we're like, okay, we're not. And we were just riding around, found a spot downtown, like, cool, we should go here. It's brand new. And yeah, we just did it. We just grinded it out. I started back cutting hair out here, making music in my bedroom.
And where does Empire come from? Did you get an agent?
No. I got a phone call from a guy whose hair I was cutting. And he was like, yo, you heard of this new show? I'm like, who the fuck haven't heard this show? You know what I'm saying? And he was like, they were looking for female rappers. You should go. You should try. I'm like, I'm not a fucking actor, bro. Like, what do you want me to do? He's like, just try it. Send me 3 pictures and 3 songs. I sent him the last 3 songs I recorded and 3 pictures, and that was it.
And you got it.
Pretty much.
So you never even had a live audition for this thing?
Well, I did. No, I did have a live audition. I went in, and they handed me some, now what I know are sides, and I was like, what is this? And I'm reading it off the paper, like verbatim, you know, because I didn't know how this thing goes. There was no practice. Nobody told me anything. This is one of the situations nobody told me nothing. So I just went in there winging it, and she was like, when did you get this? I was like, now. She was like, well, take it. Go have lunch or breakfast or whatever time it was. It was early. I think it was breakfast. Go have breakfast. Come back. And I came back and read completely off book. And she was like, wow.
First audition ever. Never trained as an actor.
Never.
Nothing.
Never.
So everyone who's listening out there, this doesn't happen.
That's what I've heard.
I had a fucking audition. It was humiliating because I would never wanted to be an actor, but I didn't know what the hell I was doing. And I went on one audition. I did a stand-up show. And Connolly, you know, he checks in on my stand-up. He doesn't believe it was any good. But I did a stand-up show. I had some manager who said, you are going to be huge. And I called the next day to check in, and she told me she was on drugs and did not remember the show at all. But she felt bad, so she sent me in on an audition. I went to this audition, and every guy in the room, which I ended up doing on the show Entourage that I created, every guy in the room looked like Brad Pitt except for me. And right. I walked in and, like, similar to you, here's some sides. And I did something and the casting director was like, everybody but you stay. I'm not even kidding. It was one of the most humiliating, awful things. So we have very different experiences. So you go, it goes well.
Castings, that was rough. I mean, walking into a room full of women, I'm like, what do y'all want me to do? These people are walking around talking to themselves. And I'm like, what is going on here? Whole time they were just reciting their lines.
And you're... You have no agent. So when they liked you, what then? How do they find you again? The barbershop? I mean, what do they do?
No. I was actually just home. I was here in L.A., and they got my number, obviously, and they were just calling me back and forth, asking me a bunch of questions, and I'm just answering them. And that was it. And then, like, the third day, maybe 72 hours after the audition, I got a call from Lee Daniels. He's like, welcome to Empire. And I'm like,
that is sick.
You know, it's funny when Breezy and I were chatting the other day, she said, yeah, they handed me a couple pieces of paper. Later, I learned that they were sides, but that's how she didn't even know. She was just,
I had no clue.
All right, pages. So Lee Daniels now says, you have the gig.
Right.
What, who I was get, on, who I was, negotiate your deal? I mean,
nobody, there was no negotiation.
Just like show up.
Yeah, honestly, it was more money than I had made ever in my life, you know, at a single time. So I was going with that. Like, I need some money. My girl's like footing the bill right now. This doesn't look good. You know what I'm saying? So I was like,
your girl probably lost her mind though. She comes out here with a record contract.
Breezy, you know, it's crazy. Empire is one of the biggest shows on TV and you negotiated your own deal. Nobody said, hey, you should get a lawyer. I don't know. Sounds kind of shady. I'm going to stop talking.
Yeah, no, I'm interested in hearing
that. Well, no, I just went with it. I had no idea any of those things, like that you needed an agent or you probably should have had someone. I just signed it, and I'm just like, okay, let's
go. So they emailed you a contract, and you're like, just done. Yeah. I'll be there. And how soon after were you on set?
And you know what? This wasn't Empire or Fox's fault. It was the people that were talking to me that the deal came through to get to me.
Who were those people?
So unsure.
And what did they want something from you after this or what?
Oh, what? There's probably somebody outside looking at my car right now.
Like, someone looking at Connelly's too, I bet.
Somebody drive this. Yeah, it came with a bunch of weird shit, like weird. And I still don't. I just prayed about it. I don't know.
Were you an Empire fan?
Yeah, I mean, I'm a fan of music, you know, and it was a, you know, you don't really see all black cast on TV. So I was just interested just to see. And it was the music component that attracted me to it. So I was watching it.
You know, I made a show with an all black cast, right?
Did you?
Came up with this idea with Mike Tyson, got Spike Lee to direct it. John Ridley, Oscar winner, wrote it. John Boyega, who I found in a little small movie, acted in it. And HBO fucking passed on it. So we're going to get into all kind of stuff like that where you think things are like easy and going. And when I got Spike, John Ridley, John Boyega, I was like, oh my God, I have like a show. I was just, by the way, so everyone thinks it wasn't going to be some white guy writing this show.
Yeah.
It's just my producerial idea and then getting these people to go do it.
So that's kind of similar to how Connelly's character blew the $4 million movie.
So everyone knows, Breezy, we did a little test about a month ago, and she had never seen Entourage, and she decided to watch it last night. So, yeah, Connelly.
And then who got that job?
That was in the pilot of Entourage. Connelly E. passed on it, and Colin Farrell took
Colin
the job.
Colin Farrell got the job. Yeah.
And what's so weird is Colin Farrell was so big then, and I know you watched six episodes of Entourage last night, which I appreciated. I watched two All-Americans, which they're an hour, so I basically did this almost the same amount of time as you did.
I did.
Yeah. So when you show up on that set of Empire, though, you've never acted a day in your life. You've seen these characters. Are you intimidated by this?
I wasn't intimidated by anybody. I rarely get that feeling, but I was definitely shook at the fact that my first day on set was inside of a jail. And that was one of the scariest places you can ever put me. You know what I mean? Because it's like it's all locked. The doors are locked. Can't go nowhere if these people break out.
Well, so what do you mean scary for you? You're claustrophobic or you've been in jail before? Or
I've never been to jail, but there's... It's Chicago. It houses some of the most dangerous people who I don't know. I've never met, but I don't want to meet them today.
Right. So you were legitimately nervous.
Yeah, I was nervous. And I sat in a trailer for hours, again, not knowing how this stuff works. And, you know, it's kind of like a hurry up and wait situation. I didn't know that. And then we got on set. I'm sitting across from Terrence Howard, and then Chris Rock is next to me. I just looked at Lee Daniels. I said, hey, can I ask you a question? I said, what do you want me to do? He was like, oh, just do you. You'll be fine. And I'm like, I'm back and forth in my head. Like, okay, if he means do you, then he means just be yourself and, like, it'll work. And I took that and I just ran with it.
I have a question, Breezy. Did anybody talk to you at all about sort of the technical part of acting with regards to the marks and just sort of the technical side? Because the acting part, like doing you, but there is a technical angle to acting. And on a set like Empire, was there anybody that kind of walked you through your ABCs or any of that? No, huh? You're flying blind.
Yeah, I literally was. And then that first scene, I was sitting. So I guess there was nothing to say but sit here.
Did you read the script and go, I know what I'm going to do here? Or were you just like,
I read the sides.
That's it.
That's it. That's all I had.
Do you know how amazing this story is, though? I mean, it really is. And now you're on a second buzzworthy hit show. This shit doesn't happen. So are you just like, fucking Hollywood, I'm going to take this place over?
Or I mean, what? No. With me, it's just kind of like when I do get these roles, I feel like, you know, I end up just putting myself in their shoes. And I do what I would do if I was them.
Right.
I don't really try to create a weird false narrative about a particular person. I'm just like, okay, cool. Somebody punch your mama in the face. What you gonna do? Act accordingly. You know what I'm saying? So that's kind of how I took it on. And yeah, because I feel like in my mind, I'm like 80 different people.
Right. And how similar is this character on Empire to you personally?
This is really like the younger self of mine.
Right.
A little extreme because I wasn't like violent. I kind of just minded my business and like I was very focused, you know, and I didn't grow up in the street like that either. So it was kind of like the what if.
Right.
What if you had to do that? Because it's like I seen it, grew up around it, but it wasn't me.
Right.
I wasn't that kid.
And so never a moment on Empire did you go, damn, I don't know what the hell I'm doing.
I had conversations, like countless conversations with my dad. My dad was like, I think you should like take this serious. Like they really like you. And I'm just like, oh, I got a different job. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I got a job. I don't know. Whatever. I had never had a job before. So right. My dad was like, you know, I think you should get an acting coach. So he like knows people in Hollywood. He's like talking to his friends and they sent me to this guy and, you know, I didn't like it.
So that's it. Have you never gone back to acting coaches?
No, I went one and it was like a group thing and it was just weird. It seemed very robotic. People were just like, I don't know.
Right.
And then I went to the one-on-one and I was just like, this is too one-on-one.
Right.
I don't like to be that close. Like,
right.
You know, so, and then I was just like, nah, let me just, you know, I had a very good conversation with Terrence Howard and he was like, I asked him because I'm like, he's been doing this and he became a very close friend. He said, you know, the acting coach thing, it's either going to, you know, enhance what you already have or completely fuck you over.
Like, right.
As we told me. So I went with, this is probably going to fuck me up. I went with that, and then I just never went. And it was costing me a lot of money. I wasn't making that much either. So there was two things, like, this might not even work for me, and two, it's taking all my money, and I can't afford it.
Well, I mean, listen, it's interesting. When I met you, which some people might be like, how did these two get together? Because we might seem like a little bit of an unlikely combination. But obviously, you know, I was looking for a co-host. I was looking for someone younger, cooler, whatever, and our friend Tim Foxman introduced us. And I said, which... a couple of times this has happened in my life. David Schwimmer auditioned for my first short film before Friends. Judy Greer was in my first feature before she worked on 30 movies. I mean, even Gal Gadot was on Entourage. I think it was her first job. I don't know. Connelly can maybe confirm that in the booth. But
yeah, Gal Gadot was on Entourage. And yeah, man, boy, talk about taking off, huh?
But I mean, there are those people that you see it, and you're one of them. You have that thing, and I believe it, and I can't wait to see what gets going with you and where you take it. So, but how were the experiences on Empire? Was it a great experience for you overall? Did you get to have any creative input in your character?
Yeah, it was. I mean, from the beginning, they asked a lot of input and it kind of was just a lot of things got pulled from who I was. I don't know if they were just looking at like social media and Facebook and stuff like that. Like everything was kind of already who I was. So it made it that much easier. But being on the set, I kind of just was watching because there was so many actors and I'm just watching how what worked, what doesn't work.
And tell me how your life changes. You get this huge show and you're doing it. Obviously, you get an agent at that point, a real person who comes in.
Yeah, I think, look, towards the end of that first season, because I was only supposed to be there, you know, for four episodes. That four episodes turned into four seasons. I thought it was an in-and-out thing. I think people thought it was an in-and-out thing. The perception was great from, you know, the fans and the audiences and the viewers and everything was cool. But from actors, because it doesn't happen like this, I didn't get treated that well. because people kind of looked at me like, who the fuck are you and where'd you come from?
Right.
And then the more and more you do interviews and they're hearing how it happened, that pisses people off. The people who have been
pissing
working,
me off right
the
now.
The people who have been working 30 years and spent thousands of dollars on acting school, and it's just like, you know, y'all got to talk to God about it because I literally don't know. You know what I'm saying? So it was weird, but.
And how does your girl react? She comes out with a record contract. The next thing you know, you're on a giant music show. Does she lose her fucking mind?
It went bad because I was gone. We filmed in Chicago. I was gone for a long time. And it was like I couldn't do both. So it went south. And it's still south.
Well, I like your first
she
day.
Hates me.
You know, my first day, because I'm remembering like my first day, which I wrote this book, the mm-hmm. Ari Gold book, basically, mm-hmm. which looks like Ari Gold wrote it, but there is no Ari Gold, which is the agent character from Entourage. And my first thing, my privilege in L.A. was that my father knew one guy, this guy Myron Roth, who was a big music guy at Sony, I think. And he was like, come for a meeting. And like L.A., I think you know now, nobody wears a suit. But like my mother got me a suit and I came out to L.A. in a fucking suit. And I go to Myron Roth for an 8 o'clock meeting, which nobody has 8 a.m. meetings in Hollywood. It just doesn't happen. But I go to this meeting, 8 a.m. I'm with my suit. This guy,
Jerk off meeting.
By the way, that's
my
where it comes from.
My audition was at 8 a.m.
So you had an 8 a.m. audition?
Yeah, for Empire.
In Chicago?
Here.
Oh, wow. Who the hell does that?
Around the corner. They did.
Well, that's weird. So anyway, I show up to Myron Roth at 8 a.m. I swear to God, I sit there till 10 a.m. And I kind of was always myself also, which is I really didn't know what I was doing out here. I wanted to do stand-up. I wanted to write. I wanted to do this. And I walked into this meeting after 2 hours sitting there sweating in my suit like a jerk-off, as Connelly says. And this guy says to me, what do you want to do? And I said, you know what? I'm really not sure yet. Mm-hmm. And he goes, well, why don't you come back when you are? And he was dead serious, and that was the end of the meeting. So my beginnings were a little different than yours. Mm-hmm. You're instantaneously a celebrity. I'm imagining you're walking around town. Your friends from back home are watching this show and freaking out.
Man, it caused me to develop so much anxiety because, you know, I go somewhere, you know, simple things like Target and, you know, Whole Foods, and people are yelling at me, you know, and the fan base were fanatics, not like, oh, wow, there's Beyonce. No, it was like, you know, screaming to the top of their lungs. And I'm not that big. I'm 5'2", 115 pounds. These people are scaring the shit out of me. So right. And for a while, I just stopped coming out. I'm like, I can't
right.
do it.
Stay home.
Yeah, and then I was just still trying.
You're not much smaller than Connelly, by the way, who also deals with that. They attack him all.
I figured I was waiting for that one, Doug. Good cue.
I mean, it was a lot. And then, you know, family and friends and everybody just immediately assumed I'm rich.
You're making like $8,000 an episode, probably, which is great. Obviously, it's awesome, but you're not rich.
You know, when you're living here, and it's just
you're paying taxes, you're paying whatever these weird people who are shaking you down for money on this contract. I mean, yeah, there's not a lot of money. But I, Connelly, did that? Kevin started working early, but did fame make you more anxious?
It's funny. It does. I didn't realize it at the time, but it did trigger anxiety because it's where you came from, and I mean this in a positive way, but when that something like that happens, it's the people around that start acting different, right? Yeah. They react differently to you, and it does cause anxiety. Bars that I would hang out and grew up in my whole life, I was getting a different kind of attention at those bars. And yes, it led to very, very high anxiety.
Yeah, I went I remember going to an event in Miami, and I came up on stage. They announced that I was there, came up on stage, said hi, and I got off stage, and they immediately rushed me like fans, and I just cried. I got down in a ball, and I just cried. I don't know. And it was going on for like 10 minutes, and then I was like, when I got done, I'm like, that's when I realized something's this has created something in me, because in my normal life I would never have been like that. I'm like, yo, what's up?
Right,
you know,
right.
But I couldn't do nothing but cry. I was shivering.
Anxiety for me is writing. The blank page gives me anxiety on a whole other level, even though I know I've done it. I mean, every time I write a pilot, I told you this, I read pilot books, and sometimes I'm in those books where they're like, oh, look at the Entourage show, and I'm like, Jesus. But it always, for me, fear is actually a good motivator for me. Mm-hmm. Fear and anger is kind of how I base my whole life. Like, that's what gets me wherever I'm going.
Yeah.
But I think right now, and you're still young, and you're playing high school, which is crazy, on All-Americans. How does that come about?
Same agent. And, you know, this role came through. And once I read it, you know, they give you that character breakdown. And I was like, this is literally Breezy in high school.
Right.
I was like, this is going to be so fun. Right. And I wanted to have fun. You know, I wanted to have fun. I felt like I had never, up until this point, I had never enjoyed what I was doing. I was, you know, because I was just nervous. There was people coming from everywhere. And like Conley said, it's the people around you that change, which makes, you know, this thing not even fun.
Right.
You know, because everybody assumes that you got whatever. So, you know, again, do the audition process. And that was fairly seamless.
And how's that been going? Do they let you have input on this show? I mean, I know, like Kevin will tell you, on Entourage, I would talk to the actors all the time about scripts and thoughts they have.
Yeah.
But this is obviously more specific. And yeah.
Well, they did the same thing. They did the same thing, I think, generally speaking, with all the characters, because this story, I mean, this show tells stories of, you know, real life things. Not saying anything else isn't, but, you know, depression, drug abuse, the opioid epidemic. The LGBTQA plus community, which my character is a part of, you know. So with that story, I just wanted it to be told organically. I think whenever you see any gay person on television, it's normally driven by sex. There's usually some sort of disease involved in it. And you know what I mean? It's just weird. So I wanted it to be like, no, this is just a girl.
Right.
You know, who may be a little bit rough or may appear rough around the edges, but she's still a girl. She's funny. She's talented. She's charming, you know, and she's smart. So let's not make a spectacle of how much sex you think she's having with a girl in high school. You know what I mean?
In your real life, did you deal with any kind of issues in high school?
I did not.
That's amazing. No?
I did not,
what
no.
What the fuck, Breezy? I mean, you got to have some conflicts. You know, the story is conflict. Like, we got to find some freaking...
It's just a fucking Carnival cruise ship over here, huh? Just everybody chilling, everything, all the lucky bounces.
I mean, you know, and it's funny because I'm like, God, the amount of times I've spent in my career going, I'm leaving this fucking town. Nothing is going well. I hate it here. I hate everybody. And Bree's like, you know what? I'm just going to decide whether I do this show or that show this week.
Surely somebody gave you a hard time in high school. No problems.
I had problems with my own friends in high school. I mean, we were animals. Like, the Long Island guys are animals. Like,
high
people
school
I grew
was
up
the
with,
best.
Yeah, I loved high school. I don't want to make it like I didn't love high school, but there was dirt, certainly. I mean, my first day in high school, I got a call the night before I got there from, I don't want to say his name because he may actually listen to this, but literally, like, someone told me that I was with his girlfriend. And he's like, I'm going to kill you. And I call up one of my friends and I'm like, I got this call last night from this guy, big 6'2", 220. In high school, I was legitimately 5'11", 125 pounds. I'm not even kidding. So I call out one of my best friends. I'm like, I got to call. Conley wants to jump in.
With a mullet.
With a mullet.
Don't leave out the mullet.
But anyway, I get this call. Vito, when you get to school tomorrow, I'm going to fucking kill you. So I called my friend. I'm like, this guy Vito called me. He's like, what did he say? He said he's going to fucking kill me when I get to school. He goes, then he's going to fucking kill you. And that was legitimately, like, I wasn't in high school 4 minutes when this giant came running at me in a football position, threw me into the locker. And I don't, you probably never saw the movie 3 o'clock High, which I'm going to make you watch.
I was going to say, that would be a great movie to cover on Hollywood Ways. It really would. It's excellent.
Yeah, because that's what I want to do, Breezy. I want to watch movies. I want you to give me movies that you love. I want to give you movies that I love, and I want to talk about to break them down. I'm gonna get Jordan Belfort, The Wolf of Wall Street. We're gonna like watch that movie. Have you seen it, by the way?
Yes, I love it.
So we're gonna get him in here, but we're gonna talk about the movie and just things that influence and inspire, which, you know, you're still getting there, but you know, that may, the script you're writing, you may find that you want to be influenced on other things. So now you got some success, life is good. Do you have bigger plans in the writings? Like, Reese Witherspoon just sold her company for $900 million. I remember seeing her when I was just dreaming about this business. I saw her in a movie called The Man in the Moon and was like, this girl is going to be huge. But who could have ever imagined she'd build a business and an empire? Is that something that you want to do? Is that something that
it
you
is.
Think about?
It actually is. I want to do it. I just feel like in this arena, you know, as we all know, it doesn't happen for people. There's so many talented people that are out here, and I just want to be able to create it, because I feel like in looking for talent, I'm not going where everybody's going to look for it. You know what I mean? So I want to just be able to create opportunity for a lot of people.
Yeah.
A lot of different people. You know what I mean? Because a lot of people never make it even to California.
Yeah.
I went to Disney the other day, and I'm like, you know, I was like, I had a very weird moment, because I said, people where I come from will never make it here. This is just Disney. And my fiance's son, he literally has been every weekend of his 9 years in life. And I'm like, you know, where I come from, people don't even like Disney. That's too much money.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah. So I just want to be able to, you know, extend the opportunities and go and dig where I know there's gold.
Yeah. Well, I think, you know, our experiences hopefully can help people a little bit. And yeah. I know things have gone well for you, but you still have advice to offer and things that you can say to people that, you know, because I do think even me, when I came out here, I did not know anybody, had no idea how to even begin to get into this business. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the great thing that I see now in 2021 is you can, which is what I did in 1990. I created my own stuff. Mm-hmm. But at the time, you created something on a VHS tape. You had to walk one person at a time, convince them to look at it. Now with social media, with the internet, you can kind of go and do it.
You can actually do it yourself now.
With the quality of the iPhones, with everything, which is, were you making your music on your own with no help from any professionals or what?
Yep. I've always done that. And I actually went to college for it because I learned how to do it. I taught myself initially and then I went to school for it, but I taught myself because I couldn't afford it. I couldn't afford a studio. I couldn't afford to ask anyone to help me because I didn't have no money to pay you for your time. So everything that I wanted to do, my own graphics, my own videos, I taught myself, you know, in my younger days to just get by for my MySpace.
Right.
And, you know.
MySpace.
Ooh, aging yourself a little bit there. MySpace.
To be honest with you, I'm shocked. I'm not gonna call her out on her age because I have no idea how old she is, but I'm shocked that you know what MySpace is.
Yeah,
I don't know, because you play high school and I kind of think you're like 18, but you know, MySpace has been gone how long?
When Entourage came out, I was in high school. I was in 11th grade.
And you did not watch, which is really
I didn't watch
upsetting.
TV.
Yeah.
I didn't watch TV. I was never in the
That's
house.
Not an excuse.
I was an active kid.
It's not TV. It's HBO. That was their logo back then.
Shut up. It's still, you know what I'm saying? Like when I was that age, I was focused on getting out. I'm not sitting here looking at Doug and fucking Connolly run through Hollywood with $1 million fucking dollars, spending $400K on a Rolls Royce.
You know what,
your
though?
Friend Adrian.
You're right. You're right. And that's the thing I think people need to know. The earlier you can kind of put a focus on what you want to do and do it. And I think
whatever
TV is, look, it's a giant distraction. It can be a distraction to me today.
The things nowadays that we're seeing in the social space of, you know, the internet and stuff, it's like made to, it's almost like hypnotizing.
Yeah.
You know, and luckily, you know, back when Entourage was out and I was in high school, things weren't that addictive.
No.
You know what I'm saying? But now they're very addictive. You got 9-year-olds who literally cannot hear you when they're on their phone.
I know.
You're like, hello.
I got a 19-year-old and a 16-year-old who are pretty much the same.
My fiance's like that sometimes. I'm like, yo, did you not fucking hear me? We're sitting in the car. She's like.
And doing nothing, by the way.
Editing a picture.
You know,
it pisses me off.
I got hooked on TikTok like recently. Like a couple weeks ago, recently, and I love it more than anything in the
world. It's like a rabbit hole.
It really
all of
is.
These things.
And eventually, they send you a message that says, "Hey, you've been scrolling for basically forever. You should take a break."
Wait, TikTok.
TikTok
does that?
Will send all of a sudden randomly. A guy goes, "Hi. I'm glad you're enjoying the app, but you've been doing this for a while and you should put your phone
They've
down.
Been putting things out like you should spend for every 20 minutes you spend staring at something, you should take 2 minutes and look around.
Oh.
Constantly move your eyes, you know what I mean? And I experienced that with our son. Like he'll look at something so long and he'll be on the computer so long that his eyes are black. Like he got in a fight in his room by himself.
I don't go on TikTok. I didn't even know they did that. But I get a phone notification, which tells me my average weekly screen time.
I would like to see that. We should post that on your social page.
It's embarrassing, but I'm trying to.
I know that I haven't looked at mine in a while. I wonder what that is.
But I'm trying to. Look, I now use it. At least I got a purpose. I'm trying to promote these podcasts. I'm trying to get the word out there. But I probably was doing the same thing
what
2 years
do you
ago
do
before
on your
that.
Phone?
Nothing. Like, literally nothing.
My girl says to me, something made a comment about me on the phone. I said, I'm working. She said, on TikTok? I said, well, yeah. I'm researching on TikTok for the last 2 hours.
Discovering people. Are you on TikTok?
I am.
Yeah, and do you do it actively or no?
I do not. That's a job.
Yeah.
That's a full job. I mean, you know, I'll post things here and there just to, you know, I do things to engage with my fans because I know that's what they want.
Right.
I'm not doing it for any other reason.
But what's your daily grind for work? Obviously, I know you show up on set and you got to do your thing. What's your daily grind aside from that? Because as Kevin can tell you, you get a hit show. Mm-hmm. Honestly, even if you're great, it's a fucking miracle. You get two, phenomenal. You get into the 3, 4, that's like rarefied air that happens to so few people. Kevin's probably done 20 pilots that have never seen the light of day. I've sold at least 15 pilots that have never been made. Like, how many pilots have you probably done that have never seen the world?
Doug always gets offended. I said the best pilot I ever did that never got picked up. It was a World War II pilot. Yeah, and it's the ones where you're like, oh, man, this is it.
Yeah.
We're going. We're running the table.
Yeah.
And then, you know, you the one that you least expect. And not that I didn't expect that from Entourage, but, yeah, that was lightning in a bottle. It doesn't happen.
So what's your daily grind, though, aside from the work on All-American? What do you do to, I don't know, kind of round out maybe a business that could go other places?
My daily grind was a lot personal up until now. It was really just focusing on myself and, you know, organizing my own business, you know, because I work for myself and my music, you know, my family, stuff like that. That's kind of was my focus because I always want my home base to be neutral before I step out into anything. And I feel like if that's not right, nothing in my life's going to work.
You're so healthy. I mean, you really are. It's like unbelievable how centered she is. I'm like, Conley and I are such fucking messes.
I'm depressed.
I really am. I mean, I, you know, and the fact that you have such a mature attitude, you grew up, I just want to hear a little bit about your background. I know you're very, very close with your father, but was he around when you were young?
I met my father when I was 27.
Right. So he was not around 27.
Well, I begin a
relationship. We're getting close on your age. How old are you?
34. I just turned 34.
Fuck, people used to tell me I looked young when I was 34, but honestly, you look 21.
I mean, I've known my father, but I was able to start a relationship with him at 27. That's when I met him. I grew up with my mom, single parent household.
And was your mom an active mother who really kind of helped you get through your stuff?
Yeah, she was active. I mean, she had 3 kids.
But where do you think you got this centered attitude from? Because it's so rare in Hollywood, the amount of fucked up people here.
I grew up watching everything I didn't want to be. Every part of my life I wanted no part of. So when I got to the point, which was about 16, 17, and I can get a job and start making my own money, I was able to create my own life for myself. Because, I mean, it's the only thing you need your parents for is money. You know what I mean? So when I was able to start making that on my own, I began to create the life I wanted. Because for so long, I was forced to live the life that other people had created for me. So that's what I did. And that's what I still do.
Well, clearly somebody did right by you somewhere along the way.
Or it's just genetics. You know, like it's kind of like the nature versus nurture method.
Did you see how he looked at me?
So I'm not mad. I'm just going to use this podcast and my good fortune in meeting you and Connelly's as well. We're gonna use you to help us mentally because you seem like you got it much more together. So can I do that? Is that bad?
She's
like
very centered.
She's centered. So, and that's what this show is going to be. We're going to hopefully give everybody advice that helps you in some way. I hope at some point I help Breezy a little bit. You know, I don't know. She doesn't need much of me right now.
She doesn't seem like she needs much help, right?
Okay.
Maybe
let's
just
relax.
Stay out of the way.
Let's all relax.
But I am excited. And what if we, like, next week, I don't even know if you're going to like this movie. What if we take a look at this movie, Airplane, that really was a big inspiration for my life, even though I don't write like that at all. What do you think of that?
I'm down.
All right. Connelly, you going to watch that too?
I'm curious to hear Breezy's thoughts on Airplane.
Airplane it is.
All right.
With no context also, by the way.
We will be back next week. Hollywood Ways, thank you for joining us. I'm Doug Ellen.
I'm Breezy. You know what it is. You know what it ain't. Connelly.
Kevin Connelly. I'm here in the booth once again.
Love it.